What up, what up? We are back post-show episode 144 after a brief little hiatus. Grant had to get hitched. Blame him. I mean, I actually think I'm the one who canceled, but I was really stressed out about Grant's wedding. That's probably what it was. But it was fantastic. Congrats to him. We appreciate him. And now we're here to talk anime and other things. This episode, we come in hot, Andor season two. So there's your spoiler warning. And then we're overdue on this one because it has been a little while. But then we go over Last of Us and Last of Us Season 2, Grant's POV as a person who's played the games and then checked out on the show. And then I kept watching and kind of where it all left, where it left off in mid-season 2 or season 2 finale, if you can call it that. But we talk about that. Then we get into Kowloon Generic Romance. We're on episode 10 of that show. And then I talk about my experience with the pilot for Orb on the Movements of the Earth. I just watched the first one, and Grant gives a very opinionated review of Clair Obscur, the video game sweeping all nations. Okay, and then we hit some very quick hitters on news. We're happy to be back. Make sure to subscribe, do all the related things, and enjoy. Oh, hey there, Grant.
Hey, David.
What's up, buddy?
How are we doing?
I'm good, man. How's my newlywed?
Oh, newly wedded.
My God.
Yeah,
Grant, we're growing up so fast.
I know.
Isn't it wild?
What a time.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, love it.
Had a fun night. Thank you for coming.
Hey, man.
It was fun
a
as
blast.
Usual.
It was a blast. You know what our friend Jeff said to me right after I got off the mic?
What's that?
He goes, I could have swore you were going to open with two little mice fell in a bucket of cream. And I've never had more regret in my life.
I had, not like, apprehension is not the word, but there was like a momentary moment of panic of like, oh, they're walking up together? I was like, is this about to be a big reveal? Like something completely separate from where it's being spoken.
Yeah. Welcome to the Comedy Central roast.
Yeah.
No.
I honestly thought, I was like, oh, I'm about to get roasted here.
No, I dragged him. I just, he was our friend who shall remain nameless for his, just to protect his ego. He just said, oh, I should say something, but I'm mortified. And he's just shaking. And I was like, you can ride my coattails. I was like, just come up with me. Just come up.
Yeah, just stand there. Yeah,
just stand
yeah.
there. You can be my my emotional support.
Yeah.
And it went
fine. It was a lot of fun.
All right, bud. Why don't we jump into it and jump into it strong, because I think we're both coming off hot off wrapping up Andor season
yes,
two.
Yes, sir. I just finished Rogue One this afternoon.
It's funny, we watched Rogue One a week or two ago. I told you that.
Yes.
You know, our buddy Shane was saying, oh, I thought you'd try to get Sam, because I got Sam to watch Rogue One. And he said, oh, I thought you'd try to get her to watch Andor first, because, you know, like the linear storytelling way.
Yep.
And I was like, it's just easier to sell a 2-hour movie than it is a 24-hour
100%.
TV show. And, you know, this is the theatrical release. It's the release order.
Did Sam end up watching Andor?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was like mid through season one or wrapping up season one anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's been hanging out on Switch or whatever while
yeah.
I'm just exclaiming on the couch about
sure.
how good it is.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, do you want to see like a peek about what this kind of is? Like this whole, you know what I mean? Because a few years back we did watch the we watched the original Lucasfilm Star Wars movies, and we did them in theatrical release order. So 4, 5, 6,
cool.
1, 2, 3. And then she goes, are we watching 7, 8, 9 now? And I was like, nah, you're good. But then, you know, that was a couple of years ago. And then
yeah.
Andor happened and Rogue One happened, you know, a long time ago. But I was like, hey, you know what? Maybe Rogue One, especially with how I'm feeling about how Andor is going.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's how that happened.
Nice.
And it was great. But, okay. Onto Andor. So,
yes.
Unlike you, I blitzed it all at once. And this is not like an aggressive, like, oh, I did it all in a weekend. It's like, I've
sure.
probably been cracking at this thing for 5, 6 weeks.
Okay.
Maybe
yeah.
a month.
Yeah, yeah.
At most. Or at the very least, a month. But man, is this... Let me just pitch it to you. Is this the best Star Wars has been since it was owned by George Lucas? And I ask you that because
that's
more,
such a loaded question, because I think you know how I feel about a lot of the animated stuff.
Yep.
I think
I could say live action only.
Yeah, but that's such a cop out. I think it's by definition it is expanded universe. So I think it should be compared. I would say yes. Mm-hmm. Because even like I do have such a love and a passion for like Rebels and the Clone Wars. There is like a lot of like as an anime podcast, like there's just so much filler and stuff that like big picture does not matter. And Andor is a specific story beginning to front to back. Tight, like is all like it's all the things that I love about those shows, the tightness and the just the incredible storytelling within this world. Andor is that. It's the live action version of that stuff, so
right,
yeah. But I would think it beats out all like the Mandalorian and all that stuff. Like, yeah, it's even better than the Book of Boba Fett, believe it or not.
It's funny because you know, the Mandalorian kind of got lost in the shuffle for me a little bit. I was like, oh right, mm-hmm. they did do that, and I did really enjoy it.
Yeah,
and I have even forgotten at points that they have a movie upcoming to close that out.
Yeah, Mandalorian which, Grogu got pushed, I think, eh?
Yeah, by I year? Don't know.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah,
but very very interesting. So I don't know. Yeah, where do we even start, man? Diego Luna,
the dude. Like I,
the dude.
He is
Colin Lebowski.
Colin Lebowski. It's so funny. He has been a, like, he's just popped up in all these things throughout my life that I've just loved. Like, I know it's so strange, but one of my all-time favorite movies is Steven Spielberg's The Terminal. It's a movie starring Tom Hanks. He played, like, he's from a man who's coming to visit America, and whilst he's visiting, his country is caught up in, like, a civil war. So he's, like, stuck living in an airport.
Okay.
Because, you know, he can't get sent home. They won't let him enter the country. It's based on a true story at some point, and Diego Luna is just like one of the side characters in the movie. It was the first time I'd ever seen him. He plays a janitor that falls in love with Zoe Saldana, and
as you do.
Yeah, it's impossible not to. But like, he's just the first time I saw him, I just had such an attachment to him. Like, he's just such a he was just like a lovable, fun guy. Just had like this quaintness to him.
He's kind of magnetic.
Yes, and then, you know, like, years later, he popped up in, like, Narcos, which are my favorite seasons, where he played the heavy, like, I think it was the Mexico seasons.
Those I never saw.
And he was incredible. It's like, I literally went from, like, this quiet, nerdy janitor who loves Star Trek to, like, this, you know, like, hardcore, like, monstrous, you know, I guess technically Andor would have been in between that. But I think he's such a chameleon. I think he's so talented. There's this one series I see on Instagram all the time. I think her name is Brittany, but she like dresses up as a queen. She interviews people and like they wear like queenly outfits. And
okay.
Anyways, he was on it and like the two of them were talking Spanish back and forth. And he's like, just the way he compliments the speaking of Spanish, like, oh my God, I just want to be around this guy. Like he's just,
right.
He just seems like such a, like a warm person. So watching him and all the success with Andor and all that, just it, like, you know, like people have their favorites there. He's always one of my favorites. So. Love him.
The actress who plays Mon Mothma.
Yep.
I don't know her name off the top of my head, but
I don't either.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. Stellan Skarsgård, amazing.
One of the best written Star Wars characters ever, Luthen. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. And then, you know, much has been made of what Andor cost to make. Mm-hmm. I think the final tally is somewhere around
640 million.
Yeah. What?
I think I saw 176 was.
I saw $640 million.
Oh my God!
Which is like north of $20 million per episode.
Jesus!
And I've seen it in a few places. Now, granted, it is unbelievably, shockingly high value. Like, you know, you could cut that up as a movie, and easily be like, oh yeah, this is like every inch a Star Wars movie with a multi. $100 million budget, so I guess it's not that short. And it's 24 hours of TV. You know, Rogue One was 2 hours of film, right?
Yep.
So it's not that hard to wrap your head around. But wildly expensive. But man, it looks the part. I think yes. I remember telling you, like, just the weird stuff. You know, just the little things Star Wars people notice, right? How Coruscant looks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mon Mothma's Rolls Royce inspired flying car. The ships, the tech. That like really cool cyberpunk is not the right word. That like really cool Western
spaceship. Neo noir like like Cowboy Bebop, you know, like kind of like neo futurism, you know, kind of like set in the past and whatnot, but very practical, like Alien.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, like, you know, feels like we're on the Nostromo at all times.
Yeah, and so, you know, everyone has said this, but I think it bears repeating because I'm very new to Andor, is they did all this and told, you know, to our point, mm-hmm. arguably the best Star Wars story seen in well over a decade, without showing a lightsaber, without showing a Jedi, without leaning on Palpatine or the Skywalker family.
Mm-hmm.
They just gave themselves, you know, a very open laneway to explore new stories.
Yeah, an even better example of like they like in ways they did use that, like, you know, like the
yep.
just based on like the context of the story and like, you know, all like the Death Star, right? Like they do all yes. this stuff without having to really they eventually do show the Death Star, but like it's interesting to see how. Like, I think some of my favorite stuff in the show is just the way the Empire, like, the comings and goings, the conversations between one another, like, the backstabbing and the outplaying each other. And, like, they play within a system. And this is one of the closest comparisons to Rebels and the Clone Wars is, like, there was quite a bit of that.
Mm.
All about, like, a little, like, you know, this is meant for, like, 13, 14-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas this was very much, like, the seething, like the genuine, like, disdain for one another.
Much more adult.
And much, much more adult. And it felt a little more at home.
Yeah.
But taking that formula that was done with, like, the animated stuff, it just, I don't know, it's one of, like, the ultimate execution shows. On IP, like, just based on everything that is there, what makes sense to blow it out into this, you know, it's just, yeah, it's really cool to see.
Do you know that Happy, Sad, Confused podcast?
No.
Josh, what's his face? I can't remember. But he gets, you know, a lot of A-listers and gets them to open up in a pretty impressive way and is a pretty talented interviewer. I think I've probably sent you clips over the years. I bet if I showed it to you, it would click. But he did a live interview in front of fans with Tony Gilroy,
mm-hmm.
The showrunner of Andor and writer of Rogue One,
mm-hmm.
Kind of just saying, you know, asking like the big question, like, how did you get here? Did you know what it would be? And he has this answer, which is basically like, you know, once you get into the Star Wars thing, like there is a guy, they have a guy. Like mm-hmm. a lore master who says, mm-hmm. here's how much time you have to do the show, and here's this, and here's that. And he asked him all these loaded questions. Like, okay, like, in the universe, how many of these people have seen a Jedi?
Mm.
How many of them have seen a lightsaber? And he's like, 7. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah.
And he's like, so we have all this laneway. And at first, it felt like a restriction. I'm like, oh, you can't do the Luke thing, and you can't touch this, and you can't touch that. But, like, as it turns out, it's a universe. And it's not a restriction in any way. It's like it was probably very creatively liberating.
100%. Yeah.
And man, they absolute slam dunk. I've been trying to think all week since I finished it all week, the last few days, about like how it's not a 10 out of 10. And I'm sure I could find some nitpicks here and there.
Sure.
But it's pretty damn close, man. Like this is pretty close to perfect.
If I had one gripe, and it's not even a gripe, it's just I found the parts that I found dragged was the stuff, the back and forth between Andor and Bix. Not the relationship I thought was great, incredibly believable, and you know, like it's funny, like, you know, I think you and I have talked off mic. It's just like all like the trauma core that pretty much every show has now.
Yep.
Like it's whichever, like if it fits in the story, it makes sense. Like at the end of the day, if the story is executed good and the story makes sense, like it doesn't matter how much like trauma is like
if loaded organic, into
it.
Right?
But it feels like everything nowadays is that. And sure. Like, you know, like any movie podcast you listen to now, that's like one of the first things that people bring up is like, and another, you know, like in another entry in the trauma, you know, the trauma series, you know, like, anyway, so like, you know, like in amongst its peers, like a common, this is like a recurring theme in the show. And like, but the thing I found, like, the back and forth between the two of, like, he clearly wants, he doesn't want to endanger her, so he's stepping away. She doesn't want to hold him back. But, like, it literally felt, until she left, it was, like, almost every moment they had together was, like, a rehash of the conversation. Which, again, you could make the point that that is realistic, that, you know, in any relationship.
Sure.
if it doesn't get ironed out, it is the conversation returns. Like, it continues and continues. So, you could, again, someone could just say, oh, that is realistic. I agree. But in a TV series, it felt like they had the conversation 6 or 7 times.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, you know, like, here's some tea. It's going to knock you out. Like a classic, like, you know, like,
right.
You know, she basically turned him into Sleeping Beauty. And then she, you know, she disappears. And there's no, like, real resolution to that. Crushing as the series ends. I felt that insanely. But yeah. So I don't know. I think that would be my only.
I think that's a
nitpick.
Yeah, hearing you say it, I think, you know, that's probably a fair criticism. You know, I more than once was probably saying, where is this going? Because the screen time that they do get is often devoted to their problems and what she's been through. Probably in retrospect, we could have had a little bit less of that, maybe a few more happy memories of the couple. But
sure,
to your point, I do think, for me at least, and you know, spoiler warnings for Andor season 2, but it's been a minute now. But when she does leave him, that stuck the landing to me. It was like,
yes, finally, because oh. yeah, they've been setting the expectation,
of course,
so many times now. Yeah,
because you know, one of the, you know, you can kind of look at a lot of the plots and go, how do we get from here to Rogue One? And we're slowly getting closer throughout the whole, and you can kind of piece it together, but there's this big Bix problem, right? Like, what makes him make the choice? And it's kind of like, well, she made him make the choice, and that was you know, that's tragic and beautiful, and then we know what happens to his character later, and but no, I think that's a fair point. We touched on the Empire stuff, but I just have to say it on mic, like, I was shocked by how much I liked that. I couldn't believe the quality of the storytelling. Deidre and Cyril and
poor Cyril, holy fuck. I actually, like, kudos to them. I did not expect the pity I felt for him. Right up to the 11th hour there. Like,
They created multi-dimensional characters, and they introduced them as just bad guys wearing the bad uniform, and like, they couldn't have done that more deftly and more expertly. Like, really, really, like, just well-earned how that storyline went between the two.
Earned is the best way, because, like, you know, like, in the back of your mind, you're like, okay, how are they going to make me try and feel about this space Nazi? Like, you know, like, am I going to be, like, it never felt shoehorned at any point. And just the, from season one, where Cyril started in season one and his Holu.
Sorry.
Gatsby and cats. Just, like, his trajectory from, like, how his whole initial connection with Andor and, like, kind of, like, his crusade against him, just to, like, how it ended and, like, you know, like, the whole, like, the serendipity of running to each other. But, like, that was one of the most primal, like, and it's crazy, too, because he had finally seen past it a little
bit. This is the crazy part.
And it was, like, he almost had his, like, his moment of, like, true clarity, and then he just, like, he turned.
Saw red.
You know, wild. I was blown away. That whole, like, all the Gorman stuff, like, the showdown and, like, the plaza and, like, getting out. That was a chef's kiss episode. Like,
totally agree. Couldn't agree. Like, that's the tragedy of poor Cyril, is that he was, because, like you said, how are they going to try and make me feel about the space Nazi, right? And, and Deidre, too, you know, and you can kind of see their unwavering belief in the Empire starting to fray, right? Mm-hmm. And it's too little, too late.
Yep.
But yeah, he was, and then when he dies, he's probably lowering his gun, and but yeah, man, that fight scene between the two of them, so visceral, so emotional, so much impact, literally, like, one of the better fight scenes they did in the show. That was like, that was just really deftly executed and choreographed.
The choreography was amazing, because they did not slow the outside pace. Like, the conflict was going on outside.
Yeah.
And then they had such a, it felt so private and so, like, you know, like, seething, and then everything outside. It was like, just an execution of, like, big and bombastic with the little moments inside. Just crazy, like, blew me away. It was really, really good. Yeah. And then he went, like, when he started, like, choking Deidre out, like, when he was still in, like, the fortress, and, like, I was like, whoa, he snapped.
You know, I think...
Yeah, nuts.
Every, you know, his entire belief system, he watched shatter.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he put... he had, you know, not borderline, he had an unhealthy obsession with her to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think, like, a lot of what he believed in, and as far as the Empire goes, but all, like, a lot of that was transferred to kind of a obsessive belief in her. And, like, I'm helping her, which is helping our cause, which is mm-hmm. right and good.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of it broke at the same time. And then, like, he discovers what's really going on, and he turns to the one person who might be able to help him, and she's fucking in on it. Yeah. And, I mean, really, really well played.
Yeah. Wild.
Yeah.
I know it's not making the rounds, but I was relieved they didn't try and, like, tuck in Felicity Jones somehow into the story. I was a little worried, like, up until, like, a couple weeks ago when I saw the headline, I definitely thought, I was like, oh, they're going to find a way to, like, they're going to jam this in, or are they going to, like, you know, are they not going to be able to stop themselves and do, like, another Vader thing, or even, like, Palpatine? Like, they really, really restrained themselves. Like, they kept it to the immediacy at hand, like, follow these characters in, like, you know, the final moments, like, for the handoff, you know?
And isn't it funny how the table kind of turns? Like, if you just think about 10 years ago, you know, because didn't Rogue One just turn 10?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The Vader moment was like this godsend climax for that movie. And even if we, you know, look at other properties, Marvel, like you were hoping they were always going to interconnect things more.
In somehow, yeah.
And in this instance, it's an absolute, it's an absolute win that they didn't need to rely on the IP. Mm-hmm. We're telling our own story. We're doing our own thing. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We could probably gush on this for a little bit more, but I think we're good to move on.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I have bad news for you.
Hit me.
And it's a 1-2 punch. One, I told you I'd catch up on Gundam Wing, or Gundam. I didn't.
Okay, don't worry about it. I'm behind by 2 episodes.
Excellent. And it's getting worse, though. Two, I want to briefly talk about Last of Us Season 2.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Because it's over. And we've covered it.
Yes.
Yeah. Or we have been covering it on previous episodes, and I just
I told you, I'll gladly talk about it, dude. I don't want to watch it. Yeah.
So it's funny, you know, the last couple episodes, and I encourage our listeners and viewers to go back and listen. You know, Grant and I got off on, I think, a good start. They had a great premiere and second episode.
Premiere is decent, yeah.
I should say, spoiler warning for Last of Us Season 2.
Mm.
And, you know, the really big twist with Joel's character. We were really in that. And then we lost you somewhere around episode 3.
Three was where I was out. Yeah.
And then after that, it's kind of just me and Grant. Like, Grant being a little unsure because you've seen the whole video game.
Mm-hmm.
You've played both games.
And, I watched it.
And all that is, I haven't. So all this is pretty new to me. Yep. So then we were kind of, like, on different pages for a little bit. But... which is fine, because I think we're a pretty good representation, frankly, of a lot of viewers versus gamers.
Sure. Yeah.
But all that said, I got to say, a little let down by the finale.
Okay, hit me with, what did, Seattle? Was that the finale?
Well, we're in Seattle.
All right.
So I'll break it down briefly. It's only 7 episodes. And they...
Really?
Finish it what feels like a mid-season finale, and the way it ends, and I said this, spoiler warning, but there's your last one, is the way the story of season 2 wraps up is Ellie is in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
She has hunted down and located one person. Who's the big bad that we're after?
Abby.
Is Nora one of the people who is present?
I believe that's one of her crew, yeah.
Yes, I believe we find Nora.
They are part of the Seattle crew that went to...
Yeah, so I believe Ellie eventually tracks down Nora. It's actually, I do have to say, in its defense, it's a fantastic sequence. She kind of infiltrates part of where the... is it the ALF? Where the wolves in Seattle are headquartered. And they have a... they have one floor that is... quarantine because there's airborne toxin and spores, right? And they have this really beautiful, like, red lighting on the floor. It's the hospital emergency lights.
I can picture the scene from the game.
Nora doesn't know it, but Ellie's immune, so she doesn't mind chasing her down there.
Yep.
And it's just a fantastic scene from beginning to end. The two of them, it's really, really well done. There's also some really cool stuff with these new zombie types. Like, I think they call them stalkers in the games.
Yes.
That's quite eerie.
Terrifying as fuck.
Terrifying as fuck. You are already aware that, is it Dina is pregnant?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ellie's aware of that. Yeah. And then Tommy and Jesse show up, right?
Yep.
But we only meet up. All canon. Yeah. So we only meet up with Jesse because they're separated. Mm-hmm. And then things get, you know, they get wonky. We're trying to find Tommy. Ellie, you know, I think to your point and many people's point, this is one of the bigger problems of the season. It's both, and I'm a little torn on if we're looking for like a throat to choke and like whose fault is it?
Sure.
I think part of it is absolutely the writing, and part of it is the fact that Bella Ramsey's just not old enough and doesn't look old enough to maybe mirror how she would be in the game, because there is supposed to be a significant time jump. She seems quite juvenile at points, and also very impatient, and kind of impatient to a point, and short-sighted to a point that I think she's, and perhaps this is the same in the game, you can tell me in a sec.
Sure.
That I think she's losing the empathy of the audience. Like, she just keeps fucking things up, frankly.
So,
with like Dina and other people trying to like right course her, put her on the right course, and she's just continually making a mess of things.
Sure.
And I think as a viewer, we were sitting there being like, you lose Joel, and everyone's here for Pedro. And then two, you're left with Bella Ramsey, the other Ellie, the other title character. But then you're constantly made to frankly like kind of resent all of her choices.
So in the game, again, in my opinion, I don't think Ellie was more, she's short fused, but I think there was much more, she had much more frustration with her situation, whereas she kind of felt like her agency was removed when she like found out that, you know, Dina was pregnant and like things were not kind of like flowing in motion the way she wanted.
Right.
I have read like the impatience of TV, Ellie kind of is like, it's a little different of like being impatient and like not thinking it through, whereas like, you know, at this point, Ellie is incredibly calculated. Like, Joel and Tommy have shaped Ellie into, like, she is, you know, quite visceral, quite brutal, tactical in a lot of ways. But she is short-fused. And she has a bit of a, not quite a temper, but she's quite hot-headed, I would say.
It's
more,
It sounds like a more nuanced character, perhaps.
Incredibly nuanced, yeah. Yeah. I really like Ellie. But to your point, it's not that you start like kind of like, oh, like, and like, you know, like there's that meme of like, are we the baddies here? Like, you know, like you do feel some frustration with Ellie a little bit, but like, I think you're more feeling her frustration. Whereas by this point we've had one or two kind of touches of Abby's perspective, and there's genuine, like you're starting to feel a little bit of empathy. We still like hate her and like what she has done, but you can kind of like you get to know her more as a person,
right?
By this stage ish, you know. So
yeah,
okay. I don't think the show has quite provided that.
Well,
I think
here's the note they leave you on. I'll just briefly recap the finale. So there's a couple, I have a couple nitpicks in here. But I'll start with the positive. There's a scene, and I mean, it felt like, as you know, like they seem to really pick their moments well about what to recreate shot for shot. And I'm curious if this is a shot for shot one. There's just this beautifully filmed scene where Ellie finds a boat and knows that Abby's across the way.
Yeah.
And she has to sail through, or not sail, but take the boat through this storm.
Oh, one of the highlights of the game.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I really hope to see some. I hope to see some BTS on that.
Yeah.
Because I remember saying to Sam, I was like, you know, CG and AI, all this stuff is getting so good, it's hard to tell the difference. But the lighting, I mean, I don't know how they could have happened upon a storm like that. So, I mean, I imagine they have to have taken some kind of creative liberties and like punched it up. But it looked phenomenal. You know, there's lightning
like,
illuminating
the
sky. Well,
like, when you think about it, they're on the Pacific coast. Like, it makes sense, like, to have a raging storm like that. Like, I remember when I played the game, I remember thinking, like, I had never seen water physics like that in my life.
Oh, dude.
It was awesome.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you're going to watch it, but just for that alone, and sure. That red light scene I mentioned, yeah. Tracking down Nora, just, like, wild, beautifully made. I believe they deviate from the game, and this feels like briefly, and it felt very pigeonholed in, and it felt very, we need to remind the audience about this plot. Okay. She's on her way to Abby, or what? Yeah. Where she believes Abby is.
In the aquarium? Is that where they end up?
I think so. Maybe. I can't
remember. It's like a Sea World type thing?
Yeah, no, I think so. Aquarium. I think there's an aquarium. There's a big wheel, a Ferris wheel there. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I believe it's the aquarium. And yes, it is the aquarium. But she loses control of the boat, and she washes ashore on a neighboring piece of land, and is immediately captured by the Seraphites, who string her up and look like they're about to disembowel her. And she's like, she has no hope in the world. And then a bunch of bombs go off that were, and they've foreshadowed this. We know it's an operation that the ALF are conducting in the area. So she she lucks out through main plot armor, because this like other plot line happens, and we know the ALF are like, I hope it's the ALF, I'm using the right acronym.
You're talking about the wolves.
The wolves,
like, yeah.
We know that they're headed towards that island to conduct a big operation against the Seraphites. So it's like, it's a 10-minute sequence, and maybe seven, and it feels like the writers were like, oh, we need one last look at the Seraphites before we wrap up this too short of a season. Because she just gets away. It adds nothing to the story. It's just a brief, the Seraphites. And then
there's quite like a major set piece with that island and like, you know, the Seraphites and all that. I think it's post all the aquarium stuff though.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're pushing that to season three because then she like finds her boat and then just goes to the aquarium. And it's like, why did we make this weird pit stop? But anyway, then she gets to the aquarium.
Yeah.
It looks like we're going to be okay. And we get to, you know, Tommy's there. She kills two people from Abby's crew. She stumbles upon them.
Yeah.
One of them is pregnant. Trying to talk Ellie through, like, how to perform an emergency C-section. Because there's, like, confusion. She kind of happens upon them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry.
Catches them off guard and shoots through one guy and catches the lady. And it's it was actually quite well done. I know I've just, like, shat all over this island sequence.
Sure, yeah.
But this was actually quite
well. This was all on the island?
No, she went to, like, Seraphite Island, whatever you want to call it. That happens, gets back in the boat, goes to the aquarium. Now we're at the aquarium. And then she finds these two. She catches them off guard.
Yes.
Accidentally, you could argue. Like, she shot, but she probably didn't mean to kill both at once. I think the bullet goes through the first guy and nicks the girl. And they're mid-argument about Abby because they can't find Abby.
Wait, are they arguing about Abby in this situation?
Yeah. The two of them were talking. Ellie catches them by surprise. Both die.
Man, and then as the woman is something.
Dying. As the woman is dying.
Is it insinuated that this guy is having a relationship with somebody else?
No, I don't. I'd have to rewatch it. I can't quite remember. They seem to be having a logistics crisis.
Oh, okay. Because in the game... Okay, this is probably a huge deviation. If... I don't know if they'll come back to this.
But wait. Because how this ends may answer some of your questions.
Okay.
All this happens. Tommy,
I shouldn't watch the show. But...
Tommy and Jesse kind of come to... They all meet up, and it looks like we're gonna get out of here okay. There are a lot of death flags here on Jesse that now make sense throughout the series, but
sure.
You know, we hear shooting and we hear some commotion later. We run out these front doors. Jesse immediately catches one dead, and
in the game that one hurt.
I believe that's shot for shot recreation as well.
they really, when he pops up, because sorry to interrupt, but like when he pops up, it's like. Ellie is like so upset and so frustrated with Dina.
Yeah.
And like Jesse's just this torn character of like, he loves Dina, you know, and like between like, and he knows it, like, he's like really trying to be like the bigger man, but he's frustrated, but he's trying to get everyone. He's trying to help and save everyone.
That translates really well. And the actor who plays Jesse does a fantastic
job. He is really good. Did you watch, what's the Rage show with Steve Yeun and Ali Wong? What was that called?
Beef?
Not burnt. Beef.
Yeah.
He was the younger brother. I thought he was incredible in that as well, too. But so to see, I'm really glad to see him get doing more stuff.
And his character, complaints here and there about the season and all that, but like his character, I felt, not knowing the game, I felt had a really good arc. Because you're angry that he died because it is Ellie's fault, because at every possible turn he's trying to make the mature choice and be the bigger man, to your point, and he's put in this position because of Ellie, clearly. Mm-hmm. And kept saying, like, I'm not gonna die here for you. You know what I mean? Like, he's gonna be a father, he has all this stuff going on, and catches one right away. And then it's Abby who has the gun pointed at Ellie, who's unarmed, or at least not ready.
Sure.
And has her a gun point, and it seems like, and she says something to the effect of, I let you go, what the fuck? She seems very upset, like she's been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And then it seems like she pulls the trigger and we roll credits. And then,
okay,
I think it's either post-credits or post-Fade to Black, we get Seattle day one, Abby's POV. And it's just like she's napping on a couch. Mm. So all this happens, I believe, at the end of, Ellie's story, I believe, wraps, or at least is cut off here. I believe towards Seattle day three, perhaps, or maybe four.
Yes.
And then we're clearly going back in time. And then we see, Abby's kind of taking a nap on a couch somewhere. And someone says, oh, so-and-so wants to see you. Which is another character that we met that you wouldn't have seen, who has a name. He tortures the Seraphites.
Oh, also in the game, what's his name from James Bond there?
Oh, he's so good.
Why am I blanking on his name?
You're Goblin. Sorry, all the clickety clacks, everybody. Because he's really good. Jeffrey Wright,
yeah. Really good. He was in the game. He voiced that
character. No way!
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He was, was definitely, in my opinion, like in the game, his crusade, he's like, I was like, I see what's going on here, but like, but this is not what I want. Like, I want to see these two women like square their shit out. And it was just like his story is the backdrop of Abby's story. Whereas like,
That is the kinda, vibe. That
yeah,
is
yeah, vibe. Yeah, yeah. So it's, but yeah. Okay.
So it is then very clear that,
John.
It is then made, very clear that season three, they're going to tackle Abby's POV. And then hopefully they don't take too long, and then the stories will coalesce. Mm. And then they come out and they say, yeah, we don't think we can do it in three seasons. We're going to need four.
That's the vibe you think they're getting.
No, they said that.
Oh, they have said that.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is a lot of posts like, yeah, okay.
The Cole's notes are, this was only seven episodes. It felt like they cut in the middle of the season or in the middle of the story.
Sure.
And then they come out and they say, we need another season and we're going back in time. So you don't get resolution on this cliffhanger they led you to. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just like the mixture of those things. Is it going to be another 2 years?
Yeah, that's the real kicker, I guess, for most people. But I believe in the game, it was like a consistent, like, we're on day one of this, but we're on day three of her. But that's the advantageousness of a game. Like, you can just jump back and forth. Like,
to be fair, they could have done that here. They could have done.
I feel like they should have.
Yeah.
You know, kind
of
get.
What if they did 10 episodes and they did a bit of back and forth? Like, this feels kind of contrived and kind of manipulative, frankly. Unless there's some intense studio pressure and they said, fucking no, you get seven episodes, make with it what you will.
Could be.
I don't know if I would buy that, because it just felt like it feels like breadcrumbing.
It's so strange to me because, like, by design, the game felt very much like, let's get, if you want to call it the prologue to their stories.
Yeah.
It was like, you definitely got, I would say you got like 75% Ellie, and then you got kind of got more filtering in of Abby, but then you get to like kind of this point. And you do get, like, it's almost like an inverse where it becomes like 50% Abby and then, or like, 55% Abby, 45% Ellie. So I feel like, why did they not just like do that? And like, and you come to the end of the season and you're thinking, shit, like, let's, for a year, you're thinking, who do I side with more? Like,
yeah, that probably would have been,
but
yeah, I mean, perhaps, like
we people said, smarter than us, CEOs,
I don't know,
but, executives,
they, Yeah, it's tough. You know, the actress playing Abby, I think people are excited about. She, you know, in this final scene, Caitlin she gives Bieber. A good performance, but it's one fucking scene. It's one scene in 7 hours of television, so it's like kind of hard to get amped. And I'm sure they're gonna, you know, I'm sure we're gonna get to know the character more, and the and everything will make a little bit more sense and all that. But like one scene in a very short season. I don't know. It left me a little...
Like, do you have any sense of Abby at this point?
No. I mean, you know, they let the one thing, that one cat out of the bag that you were not happy with... wait, I'm obviously wrong. They don't give her one scene in the whole season because they killed Joel in episode two.
Yeah.
But you know what I meant. You know, it's just like I was curious to see her present day more than for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the sense we have of Abby... is the one thing they mentioned when she was monologuing while she was beating Joel to death, right? About who her father was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have that, and I would say nothing else. And we know she appears to be important to the wolves.
Yeah.
But that's it. I'm interested to see more. I am irritated about how quick it happened and how long it'll take to get any more. But hey.
Damn.
I think I told you, you know, Severance finished.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was White Lotus season 3, and then there was this, and I was like, oh my god, it's going to be so competitive at the Emmys. I felt like this took enough of a step down that I don't think
they'll have much of a presence.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a presence they'll have. Now, you know, Game of Thrones, I think, won Drama of the Year for season 8, so sometimes it feels like you earn so much, like you're on such a roll, or you earn so much good faith from... that base that it like doesn't matter if you have an off season. Like I'm curious about how White Lotus season 3 will do, you know, because some people are like, oh, it's a step down, and I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, all right, that was a lot. We'll see.
I'm excited. Okay. I've been meaning to go back, because there's a they did like a PS5 remake of both of them now, but I never played the remake of part one. So I'm thinking I'd like to... I got some more holidays coming up.
That sounds fun. I think
that might be my game for my holidays. Just to go back into that world.
Yeah.
But, God.
You want to talk some anime?
Yes, sir. You still on the Kowloon train?
Yeah. Kowloon Generic Romance. So we're up to episode 10 as of this...
Yeah. You're caught up?
Yep.
I think the new one aired last night or the night before.
Uh-oh.
I think it's 10.
It should be 10. Yeah, I believe it's 10. Yeah. I caught up. Yeah, I believe we're good. Sweet. You?
Yeah, I caught up.
So, I don't really know how to start. What I will say is
what a strange show.
Very peculiar. I'm caught.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm caught between I want some big reveals soon versus, well, they are drip feeding us slowly. Versus what's the pace like? How long does it go? How long is it going to be like this? Do you know if it's based off a manga?
It is, yeah.
And is it done? Say it's done.
Yes, it is done. Yeah, I know. I think we discussed this before. Like the online consensus is like read the manga because the pacing is like light speed compared to how it's done in the manga, which. I'm probably going to read it because I'm just curious. I just want to see the difference in pacing.
Sure.
Because this show is so unique in pacing because it's like every other episode is like constant drip feeds and then a lot of repeating from the previous episode with one giant gush of like the next, you know, call it like the drip. It's like the drop. You know, and then the next episode repeats it again of, like, constant, like, you know, peppering out.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, like, rehashing from the previous episode. It feels like I'm reading... It feels like the past three... Again, I'm really enjoying the show. But I feel like the past three-ish episodes has been, like, I'm reading the Reddit thread. The episode discussion.
Right.
It kind of feels like the character... But again, you kind of get that with, like, mystery box shows. And, like, where they're, like, the characters are trying to deduce it and put it together. And it feels like they're already breaking their own rules, which I don't like.
Yeah.
You know, like they're setting all this precedent for, you know, there can't be a generic if the original is in there.
And then they just broke that rule.
Generics aren't the same as...
well, they are other than Kujirai, other than the main character.
Yeah. So, so the generics aren't the same as, not the rhinestones, but the...
Zirconians.
but they are, but they're not. We're not trying to kill Reiko.
Yeah.
We are now trying to kill Reiko.
Yeah.
You know, it just, there's just a lot of like conflicting information from same characters within, almost within a breath, definitely within an episode. So I am a little thrown by that.
Also, I still do, nothing at all on Jean Terra. Like the literal thing they keep cutting
to.
They keep cutting to,
and I keep thinking, so, you know, something's going to happen. I think the closest we got to like, oh, they're about to hit us with something was when the IT guy in Hong Kong alludes that he wants to kill Reiko, which again, I think that's just a fake out. But
the gray haired guy?
Yeah. I did, for a split second at the end of the last episode was there was a different OP or ED.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh shit, are we handing off into like another stretch of 10 episodes maybe? And like we're getting new songs. I don't think that's the case. I think it is supposed to be 12 episodes.
12 or 13.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm...
There is one reveal about the food.
Yes. And even then, like it's the... They're saying how inconsistent it is.
Yeah.
Is it interesting or are they just fucking with us?
Yeah. You know, one thing I found very interesting, which could potentially... It's just the pacing, I think, is the problem.
Yeah.
In episode 10, Reiko starts, you know, there's this big glasses thing, which, like...
Cool. That was cool. Yeah.
And, like, cool pieces of animation, how they shot some of the sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads Reiko to these talismans, these pieces of paper plastered everywhere that have error codes on them.
Yeah.
HTTP error codes. 404 not found, or forbidden, 403 forbidden rather, and then 202. That's interesting to me. Because we know...
Hints to a simulation, which, you know, that was my first thought.
Yeah, so is it a construct? I mean, we know, like, is it not real? Are these evidences of... Are these clues that, like, they're living in a construct? Like, that's actually interesting. It's actually something... Is taking them off gonna have consequences? I hope we learn more sooner about that.
The thing that's been in my mind is, and this might just be like a simple answer, but like when she was in her computer software, and those were associated to different rooms. Was that her manually inputting into like an Excel sheet of some sort, or is that the system saying like, when she looked up all the units, it already had the message in it in the software?
I think that was her, how I interpreted it, at least
being a detective and putting it together.
That was her just looking up HTTP error codes and being like, oh, that's what it means, but like, what does that mean? So I thought she just found like a very basic table saying, oh, this error maps to that status, which is what
but if you look up, it would say to like, you know, like 309, it had like a tenant's name.
Oh,
then so it looked like a tenant directory.
Oh,
and it had 403, 404, and it had like the messaging from the talismans.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because perhaps this ties into the fact that they are realtors, or that they, you know, that they are landlords for like different properties. So maybe there's a tie in there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's what's been sticking out to me from that episode.
Very peculiar.
But I guess pros, because we haven't really talked about it. We haven't had a chance because we missed a week for, you know, wedding prep. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. I don't think I've ever seen, an intersex relationship or person in a Japanese series like this before.
Yeah, it's true.
And then, you know, like, it's not often you see, like, you know, I'm not sure if it would be, like, considered, like, a gay relationship, but, like, you know, like, gay people. Like, I'm blanking on Buddy, Gwen, or... Is it Gwen?
Gwen's the guy with the long hair.
And then the other guy who's like a snake, or we don't really know.
Yeah, the tongue split. I can't remember his name.
Just their relationship, I would love to know more about that. And like, agreed. You know, why, specifically why he's protecting them. And
about that person, like wanting to hurt his father emotionally by creating a fake version of his son that died is still fuzzy around the edges for me.
I think because he's only trying to do that because the father is trying so hard to recreate it. So I think he's trying to like beat him to it and somehow hurt him with it.
Yeah.
Is kind of what I gain from that.
Sometimes it's irritating when anime does the anime thing about like, I'm a character and here's my motivation. Because we kind of got that from that character. And it's like, I don't know. Ironically, maybe you could have just shown us and not told us that one.
Sure.
I don't know. But, yeah. You know, we're also bitching about, like, the show's not giving us enough, so I don't know.
It's weird. Yeah, it's so funny. Like, it feels like the show is giving us a lot, but like you said, it's not necessarily, I think, what we... It's not the questions that we want asked right now.
Yeah.
They're just kind of, like, doubling down on the stuff they have revealed to us and just kind of, you know, adding more and more to that. But, gracious. Again, the vibes are immaculate. Like,
yeah.
It's...
Yeah,
know,
no,
just,
it's still...
Just, yeah.
It's scratching that itch, right, of, like, the summer cicadas thing...
Yeah.
Oh, also, you know, like, we know this, but we haven't mentioned, like, we also learned that Kowloon's kind of in a loop, right? It's always summer. But yeah, no, it's nice to have a vibey show like that. Like, it's also really beautifully drawn. There's not, like, crazy action sequences or anything, but it is, like, very picturesque, I guess.
Yeah.
It's that 90s aesthetic.
Yeah, you were talking about those really cool shots. Like, the one, Reiko is looking at,
Kudo.
Kudo. And you can see, like, the two perspectives of his face of, like, the past him and the current him, kind of, like, you know, like, you know, and then you can kind of see two shots based on the two lenses, and, yeah, I was just kind of like, wow, that's...
They find
someone
ways...
Someone cooked on that.
They find ways to be creative with the animation.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so that's Kowloon. I have one other thing, anime-wise. You know, I was thinking about watching Gundam, and I was like, you know what I have sitting here that Grant's been on about, is I tried the pilot... For Orb on the Movements of the Earth.
Yeah, you like that or what?
Yeah, dude. I'm late as usual, dude. Whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. But no, I think very strong pilot.
Yeah.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't want to just rehash what you said about the pilot.
Sure.
Because you talked about the first episode that you watched, but yeah, it's like this historical. Anime based on the idea of heliocentrism and people starting to think about is the Earth the center of the known universe because it was, you know, chosen, etc. And then, you know, how that affected the church and people who started trying to question that. And it's really interesting anime. And, you know, it opens with our favorite, one of our favorite voice actors, right? With Nanami.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, there's that. And it opens on a torture scene.
Yeah.
So I was like,
a lot of torture in this show.
I was like, damn, Grant could have told me it was bloody earlier. I would have been right into it.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. But it's it weirdly scratches that Vinland Saga itch.
Oh,
like,
I see
just
that.
This, yeah. You know, like, it's funny. Like,
historical,
a lot of,
violent.
Around the same period ask. Like, definitely, like, a little bit late. Actually, no, probably 100 years or two.
Similar
years
animation,
later.
Too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really dug it, so I think I'll probably pick away at that one a little bit on my off time.
Great watch, dude. It's the show that, you know, we haven't talked about it in quite some time, but there's that, do I rip through the show? Do I take my time with it?
Yeah.
This is the show is a slow burn, and I think you should watch it as a slow burn, because it gets a little... There's like it's a science-based show, so this, and they don't kind of really shy away from that stuff, so they kind of get like lore dumped a bit, or, you know, kind of get science or facted a bit, like kind of, so it's good to kind of take it in waves, but
interesting.
Yeah, and just the way they play with time and all that, I really like as well.
Yeah.
That'll come, you'll figure that out later, but just
hell of a pilot.
Hell of a pilot.
Really, really strong. That's all I've got. I've got a little bit of news, but do you have anything first?
I just want to say, I got a full platinum on Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Oh, yeah.
That was my other thing I did on my holidays.
Attaboy.
I just ripped through that. I can't remember if we talked about it on the pod, or if it was at the bachelor party, or if it was at the wedding.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a few friends of ours, like Bronson's been playing it, Joey's been playing it. I think, you know, our friend Shane dabbled in it a bit, but, a thought that I've been continuing to say is, you know, I've been a lifelong RPG, JRPG fan, like, I remember the first one I've ever played to this day, my favorite is Final Fantasy IX, and very few RPGs have, like, kind of really hit, whimsy's not the word, but just like I felt like I escaped into a world.
Sure.
Like truly, like I was like enthralled by the story, you know, simple, but like find ways to become complex, and that's usually within the characters and them kind of like expanding the picture. But I played this game, and there it's a 3-act game, and by the time I had gotten to the second act, I remember looking, Leanna was on the couch beside me, and I just told her, I said, I've been waiting for this game my whole life without even realizing it. I did not realize this was the game I always
scratching
wanted.
Scratching it, she didn't know you had.
It just took me back to my youth in a lot of ways, sure. And it's an incredibly, like, it's not, it's, it kind of flies in the face of all these JRPGs that are so popular and that I love, where this isn't like a 90-hour, 120-hour saga. Like, you can play this game, hit most of the content, and feel complete at like 30-ish hours. Like, you know, so it's like it's like a medium-sized game, I suppose, in a modern standard. But it just, the design and the world and the uniqueness and kind of like just the, it like literally the, like the main villains, the Paintress and everything, like it feels like a living painting in so many ways. And I was just floored beginning to end. The combat system is super tight. The customization, you can make your party the way you want to make them. I know every gaming outlet and every person online is saying play this game. If anyone listens to this, you gotta play it. Like it's truly, truly one of the best games made in 20 years.
Damn,
like,
yeah, that
it's,
good, huh?
It's exceptional. It's a 10 out of 10. Genuinely, wow. for me, 10 out of 10. It'll be okay. This is gonna be one of those games, like, you know how people say like I wish I could play some for the first time again. This is one of them. True. Wow. Like, and yeah, it's just
an endorsement.
Yeah, like, you know, it has a, like, there's some like celebrity power to it too. Like, Andy Serkis is one of the villains.
Oh, that's cool.
Charlie Cox is one of the main characters.
Hey.
You know, like, just, and then they just have this, because it's made in France. So there's like a small cast of like some, I think some French voice actors that kind of like fit their way into the party. Just a knockout game. Like, sure. It's, and everything that's been said has been said. There's not much more I can add to it. Like, read any article online. Everyone is losing their mind. And I think it's one of the few things in the zeitgeist that everyone's losing their mind over is, like, dead on. Like, I think across the board.
Like, yeah, it sounds like what you're saying is the...
I think everyone agrees.
The hype is real.
100%. Yeah. And it's on Game Pass. It's, like, a budget game. You can get it for $50 full price in Canada. And Canadian smackaronis there. But,
there you go.
Yeah. I don't know. Clair Obscur. People
damn.
Should check it.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a fan for life. The studio has, I got some stock in it now.
Well, that's good to hear.
Not literally, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll take a look. Okay, just quick hitters here for you news-wise. Rumors, nothing confirmed. Rumors that the Batman 2 issues may be resolved, and they may be beginning filming in London early 2026.
Ooh, I fuck with that.
I mean, that said, I think to theatrical release, you know, year and a half, mid 2027 release, late 2027, it could be a little bit, but I'll take that over a we're canning it. Who knows?
My bet, Christmas 27.
That'd be nice, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. There's some weird, I'm sure this will change. It may have already changed since the last time this came out. But one of them, I'm not sure who, I think it was the Avengers Doomsday. They moved their schedule.
Okay.
And it's now going head to head with Dune Messiah, both set to release December 18th, 2026. Interesting.
Very interesting.
And then seemingly confirmed, this is appears to be actually happening for A24. Alex Garland officially set to write and direct the Elden Ring movie. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't get it.
I
don't get it personally, but...
Yeah, did you play Elden Ring for this story? Has anyone? I don't know.
I think, like all FromSoft games, it is there.
It's in there for you.
If you for it. But it's, you know, it's convoluted and... You know, I don't play the games to find the story myself. I play them to fucking play the game, and then I go to Vadi Video's YouTube channel and I watch that wizard do his magic
hell
and
yeah,
piece
dude.
Together
piece
the lore together for me, for and, I, and that is the story that I watch. What happened in the moment in the game?
Now you'll get a $200 million version of that from Alex Garland. I don't actually know what its budget is, but I mean it has to be expensive.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't make it cheap.
If people want a good Elden Ring movie, they should go watch The Green Knight.
I still haven't seen that.
That was really good.
Yeah, Dev Patel, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, he's good. I should watch that one.
He was really good in that.
All right, my friend. I think that's all I've got.
I think so.
All right, folks. Subscribe to the podcast. Don't leave yet. Let me just plug things, okay? TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, etc. Part-time Otaku Podcast. We're here bi-weekly. This is the thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
When there's like crazy anime seasons, we cover things more aggressively.
Summer's going to be hot.
There's a lot coming. We're very excited about it. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. Come back in a couple of weeks for another episode. And I think that's it. Grant, go ahead. Say the thing.
Before I say the thing, follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
TikTok. YouTube.
Yep.
Spotify, Apple Music. YouTube Music if you're nasty. Bye, guys.
Cheers.